trying to get to my agenda, but I have a feeling the first item on the agenda is quorum. We have quorum, we're missing Mr. Terry due to health issues, and Michelle will be late, but she'll be here soon. She is on her way. All right, so pledges. Oh, invitation. Let's do pledges. I'm lost without my agenda. Pledge of allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
All right, invitation. I'll go ahead and do that. Lord, thank you for bringing us all together safely for this meeting. Lord, give us the wisdom, the courage, the strength to make wise decisions by the people of Denton County. Lord, help us to provide guidance and support where we can, and to honor you in everything that we do, and help us to honorably serve our constituents. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
All right. Public? Okay. On to item 5.
All right. Good afternoon. Good to see you all. Got several things to talk about today with our CAD updates. I'll start off and then I'll pass it over to Chris and Jeannie. As you're all aware, we did make, for the last meeting we talked about our mail day being April 17th. We did get the real property notices mailed out on April 17th, and that was about 365,000 notices that went out. And the deadline for those property owners to file a protest is next Wednesday, the 17th. And it has been busy. First set of the certified estimate of taxable value totals were sent out to the entities as required by the tax code. We sent those out on Friday, April 28th. And since then, we have provided an update to those totals this past Tuesday. And that set of totals also included the uploads of the mineral and utility appraisals that are done by Wardlaw Appraisal Group. And so the course of getting those totals out for the entities so they can start their planning and budgeting and projections is underway. And I've been getting some good feedback from them on that, and we've had some good conversations so far, and look forward to continue to be able to provide those updates to them weekly as the role changes through the protest process. We also submitted the records for review, which is a statutory requirement to the ARB. We did that on April 25th, and we're not required to do that until May 15th, but because we opened up the opportunity for property owners to be able to waive a 14-day requirement and go ahead and go to a ARB hearing if they so choose, we went ahead and submitted those records to them. And we've been doing 2 days a week of hearings on Tuesdays and Thursdays since then. And about a little bit. It hasn't been a huge amount of people doing it, but there have been some people taking advantage of that, so it's good because that's a few less protests handled early on outside of the ones that have been handled informally. We had our annual entity meetings on the 1st and 2nd. A few of y'all were able to make it to those. We presented some overall CAD updates and some of our plans and budget proposal that we're looking at, and feel like those meetings went well, and did receive a lot of really good and positive feedback, since then, I've had some good conversations following that up. And I'm just really pleased. I feel like, you know, we got to have those meetings over at the county courthouse, and it was a really good venue. We catered lunch, and we had a really good turnout. I think we had about 30 people on the school district and county day, and then we had, over 50, probably around 55 people show up when we did the cities on the second day. So good turnout, and I was pleased with that. Chris and Jeannie are going to share some more specific updates with you, for their divisions. But like I said earlier, I will say that we have been extremely busy, and it's getting busier every day as we get closer to that deadline. Unfortunately, some folks procrastinate on that deadline, and they wait till the very end to file that protest. And so, today, I think at 11 o'clock today, we had, it was over a four-hour wait through our queue system. We had, we've been consistently having about 70 to 80 people in that queue that are just waiting for the next appraiser to free up to come and get them and talk to them about their values. We've been trying to keep people informed on, on social media about the wait and about opportunities to handle this online so they don't have to come down and stand in line here. Overall, I try to make a point, at least if I don't do it every day, every other day or so, I try to get out and really walk around and talk to everybody. And, the staff, even though we've been really overwhelmed and busy, they're in really good spirits. Seems positive. I'm hearing, a lot of positive comments that it's going well. And I think, even in a few times where we've had to pivot a little bit on a plan that we had, it's went smooth. And I think everything's going really good. It's just that time of year. So we're gonna walk through this a day at a time, and face the challenges head on. And whenever we do come across something that we feel like we can improve on, if it's feasible, we're gonna make a change to that process to make it make more sense for the property owners and for us. So that's all I have on that. I'm going to pass it over to Chris and let him give you some more detailed specifics on where we're at right now.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to pass out a few charts and graphs so you can see a breakdown of what's taking place currently. So the first page that you have there is number of protests, and our total, this is as of 1 o'clock this afternoon, the total is 37,473, and you can see by day how those protests are coming in, some days heavier than others. It usually starts off a little slow first couple of days, then it picks up, then there's a little bit of a lull, it picks up again, it is tempered back just a bit, and then as we enter this what would be home stretch, these last 5 days, including today, all the way through Wednesday, you're going to see it just exponentially start to rise. But if you'll look there on May 11, 2023, as of 1 o'clock today, we had 2,127 protests that came in. But over the last 2 hours, or hour and 45 minutes, we had an additional 2,438 come in. So as we near the deadline, you're going to see these numbers continue to rise. We're anticipating, somewhere close to 100,000, and we've got 37,000, 38,000 roughly right now. If you go to the second page, this gives you a breakdown between real property versus business personal property as it relates to the protests that have come in so far. But keep in mind that business personal property had their notices sent out on May 5th. So their deadline is coming up on June 5th. So they may be slightly delayed, but currently 99% of all of our protests are on real property. If you go to the next page, it breaks down that 99% into categories, the real property protest. We have commercial, mobile home, and residential. As you can see, residential with 35,052 is where the bulk of our protests are coming in. And so that actually matches where the volume of our value is too here in Denton County. It's in our residential properties. And then this final chart that you have there on the last page is protest reasons. Now this is a very, very important chart because it gives you several categories there. Of those 35,000 protests that are real property, the two biggest ones that people protest are value is over market and value is unequal compared to other properties. Those are the two main protest reasons. You can see it's 1% deeds and mapping, 1% exemptions, 1% has to do with agriculture. Failure to send notice really didn't even appear on the chart. And then other, there is a box on the protest form that says other. Now, when we get other, we don't necessarily know what that means or how to prepare for it. But when you put all of these reasons together, as of 1 o'clock this afternoon, there were 76,778 protest reasons. When you have a single protest, they may check several boxes that they want to protest. So that one protest actually becomes multiple cases that we have to prepare for, because the board has to make a final determination on each protested reason. Maybe it's over market. They have to make a decision. They may be claiming that an exemption was denied. They have to come back and make a decision on that. So the appraisal staff has to prepare not just one hearing, but they have to prepare for multiple reasons that become an expanded amount of research that has to be done. So when you see 37,000, there's much more behind that than just 37,000 accounts. There could be 77,000 reasons that need to be prepared for. As we enter this final stretch, we're going to have our resources really pushed to the limit, because the window is narrowing between now and July 25th or July 20th when the records, you know, are approved by the ARB, and then the 25th when they're certified by the chief appraiser. That window of opportunity to receive all these protests at once, 60,000, dedicate the time to get them all case ready, evidence packets prepared, and get them heard and certified, the window narrows. That's our goal. That's the opportunity before us, the challenge before us, but that's what we're working towards making happen. So that's just an update from the various departments and the breakdown of where the protests are coming from.
So appeals department has been very busy entering all the protests into the system and appointments of agent, things like that. We updated the hearing notice letter. I just wanted to, we don't have time to like read through it or anything, but I just kind of wanted to show y'all this is what it's coming from, which is 4 pages. And it's a lot of information. Some of it's repetitive. So we just simplified it and made it basically a page, but it's front and back. Much more concise. It's organized. It has headings where they can, if they want to postpone, they can go to that section and see what they need to do, just cleaner and hopefully better for the property owner to know what they need to do when they're coming for a hearing.
So is that mailed to them? Or
it is.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Yep.
That's good.
When the appeals department schedules them, mm-hmm. they get a notice, the letter, that tells them the date and time and place of their hearing, mm-hmm. but it also tells them what they need for that
and
hearing.
You cut it from 4 pages to 2 pages.
Yes, ma'am.
But the, okay, in the detail. That's mm-hmm. great.
And then we have added 6 temps to the department to help with some of the tasks that are more numerous and kind of repetitive, such as entering the protest, scanning, things of that nature, and they're doing well. B, the appeals manager, has worked hard with IT and with some of our vendors to get some of the processes that are done manually to be done in mass, and she's worked on 3 things that have really helped us with time-wise. Speaking of ARB, they've held some hearings already, but their full panels start on May 22nd. We've got over 11,000 of the protests that have been filed so far already scheduled, and those notices are going out.
How many panels do we have?
I'm sorry?
How many panels do we have?
We're going to have 5 to 6 starting out, and then we hope to up that by 1 or 2. We're working with Mr. Shaw on that. Give you a handout as well.
Thank you.
So the first chart there is regarding the help tickets. Total interactions is probably the line you really want to look at. This starts back in January of 22 because I wanted to show kind of compared to last year what the numbers look like. But you can see there from March to April, we're pretty much a straight incline. We've got total interactions last month of almost 22,000 through the help tickets. So that's people that call or they just go online and see that they can email, and that turns into a help ticket for us to answer their questions and try to help them.
That could mean someone would not walk in as well, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one of the first things they hear on the phone when they call is that they can go online, so it also keeps people from waiting on the phone. That's great. And then if you compare to last year, you can see we're about 1,500 up per month, and then in April we were up about 4,000 more than last year. But I think that's also because our notices went out all at the same time, so that increased it more rapidly than what it was last year. And then on the next chart there, that is the tracking of our walk-in informals. That's done through a system called QLIS. So these are just not everybody that walks in necessarily. They're the ones that had informals with appraisers. So you can see I've got just each day in there. And the most we've had in one day is 253. But they're working an average of close to 200 right now per day. So we're doing pretty well there. And then on top of those in QLIS are people that come in with just the normal questions that people have, whether for exemptions or, mm-hmm. or what have you. And then phone stats is the next chart. I tell you, we have a lot of phone calls, as you'll see. There's a day there, April 20th, we had almost 1,600 phone calls. These are strictly incoming phone calls. We have about 3 people in customer service that can answer the phones. She tries to split that up and, you know, rotate them out so people aren't exhausted of just answering the phone. And then we have a couple from other departments that help when they can. Of course, they're busy as well, but we have about 5 people on average per day helping with the phones. So if you take something like that day of 1600 and you divide that by 5 people and you divide that by 8 hours, it's about 40 phone calls per hour. So there's no way that we're doing that. I mean, we're trying the best we can, but I'm sure a lot of people hang up and call back, or they hear our recording, you know, that says they can go enter a ticket and we'll do that, or use some other form to get a hold of us. But the phones are, that's a very taxing thing on us.
Any feeling for wait times that people are waiting on?
I called this morning just to see, and it said 20 people were in front of me, time-wise. But if you have 5 people answering, you know, it's,
yeah,
I mean, hard to judge, but.
And also, if you're giving them some challenges of other ways to do it,
yes.
I don't know if we did that in the past or not, but I would think that that could move a percent of that number as well.
I think we did do that in the past. However, we're actually working on a phone tree that I hope that will go live today.
Good.
To see how that helps. We put a lot more information on there.
That's what I meant, yeah.
More like common questions, whether they can, you know, where they can go to find information, or, you know, or they can get routed to the correct, you know, department instead of having to wait for somebody to send them somewhere else. So hopefully that will
improve
that.
Our system doesn't allow callback, right, to where they can leave a number and call back when somebody's available.
No.
Is the phone tree, is it something that we're doing, or is it something that is a separate software?
We use Vested Networks for our phone system.
Okay.
It's something that we can set up through that.
Okay.
So we change it during different times of the year.
Okay.
And whatever, to kind of, you know, whatever the general questions are, we can always change and say, you know, what's the most asked thing, put that on the recording. That way people don't have to wait as long.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, personally, I think that this chart will make us next year look even harder at what things are there. And this material, this measurement, they're really good. Thank you.
If I may, I was just going to add, when she showed you the walk-in traffic, she had, you know, highlighted, you know, yesterday there was 176, 510. One thing that's not tracked at the moment, that we're looking at ways to be able to creatively capture that data, is of 176 or 253 people walking in one day, that doesn't actually account for how many properties they want to talk about. We've had, over 20 properties, one person, so they're just one of the 253 for the day, but they have over 20 accounts that they want to discuss. Maybe they're all rental properties or something of that nature. So it really is a little bit, you know, deceiving, because it could be far more than just 253 accounts.
Right.
It's multi-property accounts.
And that multiple goes back up to a chart that you showed as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And so what percent of that will help you with all those big numbers? You think there'll be 20% that will come in through realtors? You think 25? They carry big parcels.
Oh, it's going to be our agents that have the largest.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And those are going to be, well, we're seeing those come in now. They'll send us those lists in these final 4 days, and one agent may have 8,000.
That's what I thought.
The next agent
so that's
may have
good.
And
historically,
the agents have carried about 60-70% of the protests.
That's
here.
What I thought.
Yeah.
There's been some variations in that. Last year it was actually a little bit less. It was I think around 55%.
I think last year those also came in very late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. I don't have like numbers of accounts, but as far as agents, 52 of our agents have filed so far, and last year we had 266 agents total. So we think about an eighth have filed so far. So there's going to be a lot of agent filings next week.
Now next week.
You
yes.
bet. You bet.
Yeah.
But that's normal though. That's just part of business.
Yes.
It is.
That's a break too.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're coming in with that many, that's not that many phone calls coming in separately. That's not what I was looking at.
Yes.
Our problems coming in.
Yeah.
And then as far as my customer service department, they have about just under 5,000 pending homestead applications right now. They've received about 3,000 of those last month. So they're steadily working through those as well as trying to help people coming in and calling. So that's it for my updates.
I did want to go back really quick. You had asked a question about the ARB and the panels and stuff, you know. So one of the challenges this year, we lost over half of the ARB going into this year, and so there, you know, there's over half of the members are brand new this year, and so, you know, we have been talking to Mr. Shaw, the ARB chairman, about, you know, the demand and the needs, and, you know, he is well aware and focused on trying to get these new members exposed enough to where they will be capable to sit on a panel alone. So, and it's actually been good that we've been having these hearings 2 days a week, because it's been able to give him opportunity to expose these new members. So he's been running like 4 and 5 member panels over there, having new members sit and observe, so they, you know, so they get some experience and know how to run a hearing. What he's hopeful in to be able to do this year is probably the first couple of weeks run. He wants to run 6 panels if he can get everybody to show up. And after that, he's gonna ramp up to 8 if possible. That will be, I think right now we've got 27 or 28 members. We lost one due to a conflict last week, and we have just recently lost another one due to some pretty major health issues. Mm-hmm. Right off the bat, you know. So, but it's challenging getting people placed on that ARB to begin with, get them the training that's required by the state, and ready to go for a, you know, for a season, and then to retain those people through the whole summer. But that's the goal, that's the plan, that's what, you know, his intent is. After that, about second week, he's going to go full with everybody he's got, so that'll be 8 panels running, which is good. I don't remember a time last year where we had 8 full panels running. I think at best we were doing 7. We might have had a day or two where we were able to actually have 8 panels running. But so I feel like overall heading into ARB, we're better than we were last year. So
are they not expecting air conditioning?
Still not where we need to be.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But I tell you, these charts finally helped me to understand better where we're not. And I think these are things that in the future we can track and begin to understand where we can get better. And this all these people standing in line, you know, is there any way to take 20 at a time and give them a number and text them and at least let them go to the car and sit?
That's the key list.
That is the key list, and we're doing that now.
Yes.
Good. Yes. Okay.
They could pick their number at 9 in the morning and know that they're supposed to be back at 3.
That's beautiful. I did not know that.
Yeah, it gives, once they enter that queue, as long as they will provide their cell phone number, if they're added to it in person, they give us their cell phone number, it'll immediately send them a text, and it gives them an estimated wait time. And then it will follow up with, you know, your next in line, basically. And then you're summoned by someone. You get a text message. But the good thing is people can join that, and that was part of our packet that we sent out with a notice. They can join that queue without even being here in the office.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. They can just text in and join that queue from their house if they wanted to, and get in line, basically.
For sure, we did that. It was immensely popular.
And it would have to be.
People thought we really figured this out.
Well, I would never stop trying to get better.
Absolutely.
What did we budget for on ARB members? 40?
Yes. All right.
Anything else on that is updates?
Question.
Yes.
There's going to be a pretty good number of teacher retirements all over the place. I wonder if any of those folks would be interested.
Yeah, thankfully Paige is sitting back there, and Louisville ISD has been talking about, they're going to put something out to try to, attract some folks to apply for the ARB. I encourage all of the entities to do that. We will provide, it's a one-page document that outlines the job, the pay, the responsibilities, the things that disqualify you from being able to serve on the ARB, and it's a little one-page solicitation basically, and we'll provide that to any of the taxing units that care to take that and push it out. We'll definitely appreciate the help. The challenge is the timing of that. I think the best time to start doing that is later in the summer, and trying to get those folks so we can get them to get an application in the fall and get them appointed by the end of the year, first part of next year, so they're in, and then we can get them into the training, the state required training, and then also the district hosts this or allows the ARB to use this facility, and the ARB will hire a few people, consultants basically, that will come in and do some supplemental training for the ARB members.
Who's the administrative judge now?
You would ask that.
Is it still McFarland?
McFarland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Still.
Yep.
Okay.
I believe so.
Well, he should know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He's been great. Anytime that we get a group of applications and, the TLO will send it over to him, he's really quick to get them, vetted and then appointed, and the ones that he can appoint and gets them on really quick. So, that's been good. He's very responsive and quick for us.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah.
Anything else under updates? All right, item 6 is a consent agenda. Anybody want to take it from the consent agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. There's no discussion on the consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. On to item 7. Discuss and approve September 2022 financials and value changes from February 2022. Is that Kim? Is that you?
That's me. We, through a open records request, realized that September I had omitted sending that to Dawn and Misty, and that was not submitted to y'all, so it is coming to you now. Obviously, a long time has passed since then, but I'm happy to answer any questions pertaining to this.
Any questions? Okay. Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's approved. Considering take action on penalties and interest. You again.
Okay. This is actually the first one we're going to do this year. We did not do the first quarter. There was a billing kind of a hiccup, and there was some confusion, quite a bit of confusion on the part of our entity's sake. We apologize for it profusely, and so this is the first one. There are not a lot of outstanding. The folks that went the largest one, they reached out to me and explained that they had been letting me see
I remember right, last year, this I learned this is a normal process that's gone on for quite some time, and it's really more of a budgeting issue inside. Yeah, okay.
And you said Northwest is already paid, and Denton's really the only big one.
And by the end of April, they had been.
Oh, they did? Oh, okay.
You have to use a cutoff date.
Sure. No, that's fine. Move approval of waiving penalty and interest.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. So that passes unanimously. Item 9. Changes to the employee personnel policy handbook.
Yeah. Have you guys, did you get a chance to take a look at those two policy items? This is something that, you know, that I've wanted to do. And so what we've taken a look at was, the first thing we took a look at was the maternity leave policy. And we have on retainer, we have a law firm that helps us with some HR matters. And so we contacted them and had some conversation with that counsel about, you know, our current policy on maternity leave and kind of what my intent was and where I wanted to go, what direction I wanted to go in, which was really kind of twofold. I wanted to take a look at what we currently had in place for maternity leave and just really kind of compare that, you know, to what's typical right now. You know, we currently have a 2-week paid maternity leave policy, and you know, what they've observed and what they see as typical for a maternity leave is 4 weeks paid. And so the policy that would replace maternity leave would actually be parental leave, and it would provide for a couple of things. It would provide for a 4-week paid leave for a mother that has given childbirth. It would give her, you know, 4 weeks of paid leave to recover from the birth and to bond with the child. But this leave also would provide for a partner, spouse, father, basically, or even if someone was adopting a new child, or a situation where there is a surrogate mother and a surrogate baby, and you know, the intended parent was an employee here, would give them a 2-week paid leave to bond with that child. And so what I'm asking you is to consider the changes to that, to move from a maternity leave over to a parental leave that gives it gives both parties the option of taking some paid leave with a child. You know, I feel like as there's a transition in the workforce and we've got you know, some younger folks coming in, you know, I feel like this is a benefit that DenCAD can offer with really no, you know, financial impact to the district, but also you know, giving a benefit to these folks that are, you know, in family stage of life and raising children and having kids. You know, that's one of the things that people look for when they're looking at jobs are these types of benefits. So we also did ask that firm to take a look at the FMLA section of our policy. There's several things about this type of leave and other paid and unpaid leaves that line up with FMLA. And so we asked her to kind of take a look and read over that. And so she made some recommendations for some changes that kind of helped align the FMLA policy with our leave policies. And therefore, you know, we can refer to the FMLA as far as these types of leaves running concurrent with FMLA. So again, the ask from the district would be for you to approve these revisions to the personnel policy, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about them.
Can you specify that they not have children during the protest?
That's reasonable. I'm surprised how many work around it.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like a cleanup to me.
Most of the time, you know, they're really cognizant of that time of year, and I don't think they try to anyways, but yeah.
Did the attorneys recommend that we do this? Has this been benchmarked at all studied?
No, the attorney didn't recommend on the maternity leave. That's uh-huh. just, that was a desire of mine.
I'm
to
not
change
opposed
that.
To it, but I just wondered that.
The recommendations did come in on the, you know, taking a look at and cleaning up the FMLA when we were looking at this. And so she made the recommendations for the changes in this.
So in those cases where it's a surrogate parent, mm-hmm. is there, I mean, I guess maybe the reason for the 4 weeks for, you know, the pregnancy as opposed to surrogacy is because of the medical impact
yes,
of that?
Yeah.
Is that what it
yeah,
is?
Yeah, the recovery from, you know.
I just was curious if we would not want to give more time for the bonding of a surrogate parent, because mm-hmm. 2 weeks doesn't seem like very long to me, you know.
Yeah.
I had the same question, whether it all ought to be just 4 weeks.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking is just, rather than necessarily saying, okay, if it's surrogate this, and then if it's, you know, natural childbirth it's that, mm-hmm. that if there is a child that is born in the family, adoption, mm-hmm. surrogate, or otherwise, that they're, mm-hmm. that we would just, for, if nothing else, for convenience sake, continuity sake, to have the 4 weeks either way.
Okay.
But also if it's related to bonding,
mm-hmm.
I personally think it needs to be longer. It needs to be that 4 weeks just across the board.
Is that what y'all do?
At the county, they are the FMLA kicks in. They have up to 12 weeks that they can take. There have been times where we've had employees who have taken the full 12 weeks, but usually the average is around six to eight weeks. And so there's not really, it's really all tied to FML. It's mm-hmm. not necessarily tied to if this, then that. It all falls under FML. But mm-hmm. we don't have PTO. We have vacation and sick and comp and all these different buckets of time. Whereas here, I like the fact that there's PTO because then you can use it however you need to. You don't have to qualify it as, well, this mm-hmm. is vacation, this is sick. You either have it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
But, because that's what we do. But I just felt like 2 weeks is not long enough to bond with a brand new, you know, with a newborn mm-hmm. in a surrogate type of situation.
Okay.
I agree.
I move to approve both.
Whoa. I have a, okay.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I just have a couple of questions on the Family Medical Leave Act. So if, mm-hmm. if we're done with the parental leave, right? Okay. May I move forward with FML, or do we need to do the parental leave first?
It's all one item.
It's all one item, right? Okay. Okay. Under medical certification, DCAT can seek clarification from the employee's health care provider contained on the certificate form. Is there any concerns with HIPAA? How would that certification occur? In other words, do you believe that Is there a question that perhaps the certification is less than truthful, or is it a situation where there's something that's come up that you need to ensure that you're providing the right amount of time? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I mean, that medical certification was part of the recommendation made by the council.
Okay.
It should not be a HIPAA issue.
I didn't know how that worked because I know at the county, and the reason why I asked that question is for us, anything that's FML, we are completely taken out of it,
mm-hmm.
and it goes straight to the Human Resources Department, and they administer everything FML. And there's times where I've had employees that I received certification that they had been approved for FML without us knowing that there had even been an application. So that's why I wanted to make sure that
mm-hmm.
we were, I'm sure the attorney has thought of all those things, but I did have a little bit of concern about that.
Okay.
And then the only other question I had was if they're on FML, they have to check in periodically. I'm assuming that that is something also that is allowed. Again, I'm kind of going from what I know occurs at the county, which is you cannot contact for any reason. If you feel like you need to contact them, the HR department contacts them. So I just wanted to know, for clarification's sake and just throwing it out there, is there the ability to do that without violating any part of FML? And that's the only questions I had.
The cases that we've handled, all the contact has been with me. If
okay.
they have a personal relationship with their manager, obviously they can reach out and have those discussions. And we are small enough that a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
it has been my experience that those conversations are typically born out of concern, and the employee is very aware that those conversations is born out of true concern.
Okay.
Yeah.
For them, their health, the situation. Yes, it's good to know what benchmarks there are.
Yeah.
But it's and when it comes to insurance, are we continuing so the benefits component of it?
Right. Okay. I just wanted to throw that out there just because I only have one frame of reference and it's very different from the way this reads.
Sure,
so I wanted
sure.
to make sure that we were thinking of all the different.
And those records
issues.
Are kept separate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do a separate file for an FMLA or short term disability.
Yeah.
Disability
okay.
Problem.
Okay.
Any other questions? Do you want to make a motion?
Yes, I make a motion that we approve changes to the Employee Personnel Policy Handbook on FEMA policy and maternity parental leave policy.
Okay.
Is that correct?
And with...
Leaving it at 2 weeks or changing it to 4 weeks for all?
Oh, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I think that
all
has
right.
to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
I don't know that it has to be, but I think it's...
So we have a motion and a second to approve... changes to the Employee Personnel Policy Handbook and FMLA policy and maternity parental leave policies as presented with the change from 2 week to 4 week on the parental leave.
Okay.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Budget. Item 10.
On your table, I wanted to make sure that you guys had a copy of the proposed budget summary, and there are a few documents paperclipped to that. There's a couple of organizational charts and another chart behind that, just for reference as we kind of walk through this. And so, I will start this discussion off, and I'm going to talk about the personnel services and then I will pass things off to Chris and Jeannie to talk some more about some of the other notable increases in the budget. And so we can go through the whole budget and keep questions to the end, or we can stop at the end of every section. I really don't care. That I'll leave that format up to you guys. If you want to interrupt me with a question, that's perfectly fine as well. So starting in the again in the personnel services, I want you all to know that it is extremely important to me and to the rest of the leadership as we've worked on this budget to be as conservative as we feel possible in this budget while trying to position the CAD for what I consider to be successful and healthy growth. We've talked, I feel like we've beat the topic of needing more people, to death. But, it's inevitable. We've got to continue to grow this district and get more employees so we can handle the volume. Before I go into the personnel services, I just do want to highlight that Kim and the rest of the finance team, they did a tremendous job. They worked really hard at going through and comparing the actuals to budget, to ensure that we have sufficient funds in all the accounts that we may not have had sufficiency in. And if there were opportunities to make some cuts, they did that as well, recognizing where we are, currently and kind of trending out over the rest of the year, what we plan to spend. So going into the personnel, like I said, I did provide you guys with a couple of different organizational charts there for you to look at. One of them is how the organization currently sits right now. And then there's a 2024 org chart there as well that kind of outlines some of the changes that we would like to make with the organization. So I want to go through this. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but if you have questions, please stop me before I move on to something else. As you can see on the 2024 org chart, I've got a couple of different highlight colors on there so you can kind of see some of the changes. If it's orange, it's kind of what I'm considering to be a restructure. Maybe it's a movement of a position or a task realignment and a renaming of a position. So starting over at the left of the chart there on business personal property, we did have four support positions, and we've transitioned three positions to what will be appraisers now in 2024. We don't feel like we need the support as much as we need actual certified appraisers working these properties. Those appraisers can work all of the different business personal property types, including the lease property. And when you move over to the commercial department, go back to business personal property. We did this in the business personal property department and in the residential department. We identified, I feel like, the need of creating some different levels of appraiser. And so you'll see on the org chart there where we have appraiser one and appraiser two. That's going to be based on, skill set and competency at a certain level where we determine that appraiser is, and that would identify if they're a level one appraiser or a level two appraiser. We feel like that part of that structure provides for some benchmarks and also some incentives for improvement within those departments, and it helps us frame those positions better overall. So again, that's another small change to the organization in the appraisal departments. In the commercial department, we're creating senior positions for both the commercial appraiser and the ag and land appraisers. We feel like that will be an extra layer of not necessarily oversight, but supervision and mentorship. A senior person in those departments will be helpful to that supervisor, and it'll also be helpful in the team for them to have another person that they can go to. In the mapping department, I'm looking to add another GIS specialist to the team. We haven't grown the GIS department really, and the overwhelming amount of work that GIS does on an annual basis is continuing to grow. I mean, they're processing upwards of 40,000 to 50,000 deeds a year now, and a lot of those deeds could mean redrawing in the map, whether it be splits or merges, and so they really need additional staff there. Moving over to the residential department, currently we have two supervisors with two teams, and Chris and you know, the new residential manager over there really agree that that's such a large team for one manager and two supervisors. Such a large county, especially that being our biggest load on appraisal. It's a very large team that we intend to continue to grow yearly. And so we feel like it would be really beneficial to split this team up into four groups of appraisers. So adding two supervisors would allow us to do that. And then adding an appraiser and changing an appraiser from an appraisal support position. So you can see on that org chart there, we would have we would basically have two appraiser ones, two appraiser twos, and two appraiser threes for each team of residential back there, and they would all have a supervisor. Residential has got a lot of work to do, not only just the reappraisal. We've got some catching up to do on inspections, just actually getting out there, boots on the ground, and seeing these properties. And as that team continues to grow, we're going to need that supervision in place for each one of those groups of appraisers that that can train and help train and develop these folks and help lead them. I just feel like it's necessary to add to that layer of supervision back there in residential for quality control purposes, and just the overall sheer supervision of that large of a group.
I have a comment.
Yep. Okay.
Knowing what I know about how fast the residential market's going to grow over the next few years, I think you're being really smart to get this to a place where it's nimble enough to be able to be grown quickly.
Yeah.
Because we're chasing a train that's running away from us. And it's, you know, if it's 20% this year, it could be 30% next year. And you're being really, I really admire your thinking, your forward thinking about this. Because it's, otherwise, we're just going to be running. And I don't want to be apologizing to the entities.
Yeah.
And say, you know, I want to be ahead of it.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Sure.
Continuing to go across the chart there, we would like to create a new department for 2024 for training and development and bring in someone to start that up. We've got a few folks in mind, and those folks are retired, seasoned, veteran chief appraisers that I've been talking to, that their passion is teaching and education, they're excited about things that are going on here at Denton, and they want to add to that. And I feel like with the growth over the last year and then hopefully this next year being able to continue to grow this organization, I feel like it's going to be really important to have that person that can come in and start to assess each department and the needs of each department in the realm of training, and then start to develop programs for each one of those departments. And somebody, you know, such as a retired seasoned chief appraiser is going to have that wealth of knowledge that stretches all the way across all operations. And so they will be able to come in and start to help us develop training programs for every department, for, you know, for all the appraisal departments, for the customer service, and develop and build a sustainable training program that will help us continue to feed these people as they're growing in this business to where we ultimately have a very strong succession in place, and we can continue to grow healthy. I want healthy growth. I want, you know, just coming in and hiring a bunch of people and not having a plan, not having a program, is it's not sustainable. you know, we can get the people in here, but if we can't start training them up and developing them and getting them to grow to where they can turn around and they can help others that come in behind them to grow, then, you know, I don't feel like we'll ever have a healthy growth here. And that department will be key in that. Again, I think that person with that skill set will be able to come in and just catapult us into the position that we want to be in to start really training these folks the way they need and deserve to be trained when they come in. The next department is probably...
Don, I do have a question.
Yep.
Do you foresee in the training development, do you see setting up this as a sort of classroom environment that as new hires come on, they train them that way?
I'm glad you said that. So it'd kind of be twofold, honestly. This individual would, you know, they would help with onboarding and help with the initial, you know, getting someone's feet on the ground. But then also being able to, you know, throughout the year have a classroom setting for, you know, customized for each department, and have sessions over processes that we have internally. But also this individual would help us become our own core and continuing education provider to where currently, you know, we somewhat do that. We use this facility for, you know, to our benefit, but we partner with Texas Association of Appraisal Assessing Officers in their education program. And so they bring teachers in. There's still a cost to the district. Utilizing an individual like this that is a core education provider, then we can do that in-house and there's no cost.
To build the neighbors.
And, yes, we could potentially invite other, you know, semi-local appraisal districts over and staff over, and
we,
there could
we
be
did
a,
that a few years
there could
ago.
Be a, you know, a small charge that we could recover some of the cost.
I mean, you can develop it down to, they were doing it with public schools, like fifth year German. They don't have that indicator. They could get it in a podcast from us, and it was a nominal fee, but it was paid for itself. And if we're making all of our neighbors better and getting paid for it in the bargain, it's a win-win. I like that, man.
Yeah. Also, I think it's key from the discussions we've had, every person knows their training plans, and they have their what they need to do for that year, and then the extra depending on where they're weakest. But that's something they need to have in hand.
It's really smart.
The next department, which currently is customer service, changing, and this is just semantics, but changing the title of that up to exemptions and assistance, and but making what I feel like would be a really substantial change for the organization and adding four positions to that department. And a little bit of restructure, we would create a division within that department that would handle exemptions. We don't have that right now. We've got exemptions sprinkled, you know, and some of it, I couldn't tell you the reasons for the separations and the movement of those exemptions, but I can tell you that right now we're a bulk of the really large exemptions are processed, it doesn't really make any sense because they're processed in business personal property.
Isn't that agents doing it mostly?
No, it's, I mean, you know, so the only things that would stay in personal property as far as an exemption would be the ones that are tied to personal property, which are your Freeport exemptions. And then if there are any abatements for personal property, it would be handled there. But all of the other exemptions, the charitable and religious organizations, all of the other exemptions would come alongside of the residential homestead exemptions, and they would be processed by these exemption specialists. And that's what they would be dedicated to, would be exemption processing. So we could have them with their task aligned over here at processing exemptions, and they don't have to worry about like what our folks are doing right now, trying to juggle all these different tasks at once, you know, get a little bit of time to work on some homesteads and get a little bit of time to answer phone calls and, you know, work at the front counter and pivot back and forth. And, you know, it's hard to really get any traction and get, you know, get good momentum going on a task like that if you're having to stop and, you know, answer the phone or stop and get up and help somebody at the counter. So I feel like this would be a really great benefit. And, you know, so allowing for us to add those positions, three exemption specialists and a male person. Right now, one of our customer service ladies is, she's the main one. And so that takes, I mean, it takes hours from her day to go get mail, to sit back there in the mail room, to sort, you know, to get it to the correct departments. And it's becoming an organization this size, that's becoming a full-time job.
Yeah.
And so we need a person that's what they do, you know. They work the mailroom and they go to the post office for us. So that would be extremely helpful if we could add that. The IT department has always been a little bit of a challenge for the IT department, because they have folks that are running around and they're doing hardware support work and all the technical work, and then we've got a couple of folks that they do nothing but deal with the data. And you know, a lot of what the entities need and a lot of what the customer, you know, the property owners are requesting is a requirement on that data team. Right now it's two people. And so if we could add another database admin, that would give us an individual to add to and supplement that, all of those requests, and providing all of that data when it's requested, and providing the data out to the entities and helping us with quality control on reports. But it would also help supplement for what our goal is in the entity portal, because that's a big push right now. And I'm happy to say that, you know, it was really just kind of a split second decision, because we were having some challenges getting the reports out to some of the entities in the way that we currently have to do it, that our IT team kind of pulled together. And we still have an old, what they call a .NET. It was years ago, DentonCAD hosted our own website, and we still have that domain. And so they were able to spin that back up, and they're able to put right now all of these entity totals that we were trying to push out through a Google Share Drive. They put it on that website. And so that's actually going to, it kind of jumpstarts that process for them on building that portal, because they're actually going to be able to use that framework and start really working through. And they've already really been, so Paul, one of our quality control guys back there in data, has really been working with a lot of the entities over the last several years, and he's been good about notating what is typically requested. And so he's been starting to build you know, concepts for this dashboard and this entity portal that will cater to what those entities they always need and they're always asking for. And so to help supplement that department, to split it up and give the team that is always focused on all of the support, all of the IT, all of the, you know, the software and the hardware support, and they will have a supervisor that they report to, and then the data team will have a supervisor that they will report to with very specific duties. And I just think it would make a lot of sense to be able to line that department up back there like that. That IT department is a small group of folks, but they do a lot of work that that keeps us rolling. And we need to not ignore the needs in that department.
In a technology-driven world, you have to have your technology in place.
Yeah. The appeals department, you know, adding another appeals support position, I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but one more position back there that's a full-time person in that department would really help. We're still going to continue, you know, seasonally to supplement that with temps. You know, it won't make sense to hire several full-time people back there because there are certain times of year where they don't have the volume. But one more person would be really helpful for them. We haven't added to that department in years, and so I'm asking to add one person to that department as well. So overall, I'll be looking at adding 11 positions to the payroll. Another thing that I wanted to highlight on one of those, it was the last page back there, and I just wanted to kind of give you an idea of the breakdown of that increase to the personnel. Out of that large increase, $851,000 of that increase was attributable to new positions. And then, you know, I did budget in the salaries for the existing staff overall for a 5% increase. 3% of that is, I mean, for me, it's non-negotiable. It's cost of living. And they deserve at least that. And then another 2% for the possibility of some merit increase as well. Right now, currently, you know, I've been watching surveys amongst the other CADs, and it's been an average of about 4 to 6% that other CADs are budgeting for as far as salary increases.
You say 4 to 6?
4 to 6, yes, sir. So I feel like, you know, that's in line with about what everybody else is doing. But I just wanted to just see what, you know, what the dollar amounts were that were attributable to that increase there, and what part of it was new, what part of it was cost of living, what part of it could potentially be merit increase.
Okay, that's 2/3 of the budget.
Yeah.
Budget increase.
The insurance did go up as well, but I mean, part of that, adding new people, and you know, Kim made some pretty good recommendations on just, you know, as far as the overall cost per employee, eligible employee, increasing that by 5%, so taking that up from somewhere around $14,600 per employee to about $15,500 per employee to budget for an increase in that, because I feel like we're going to need to do that. So that attributes to the insurance increase there. And that's really all I have on that section of the budget.
I have two quick questions. This is the same number we presented at the end of this budget.
It is.
Okay. I thought that was. And I had one of the Indy members ask me about this. I thought we discussed this eons ago about privatizing the business personal property department, you know, farming that out to a contractor or something. I just need to give them a reason why we're not doing that. I mean, it's part of its quality control, I'm sure.
I mean, that's definitely not typical.
Okay.
And, you know, I would prefer not to. I will say there's probably some really small CADs out there that may just not have the capability to, you know, to appraise, discover and appraise business personal property. I'm not against contracting for appraisal work, but I also feel like if we're doing it, we're gonna take more care in that work, and we're going to work harder to ensure that we're valuing all of the property in Denton County. And you might lose a little bit of that with a contract firm. You know,
generally, that's
just accountability.
There's something else.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I had that in my arsenal.
Sure.
So, thank you.
Any other questions on the personnel salaries increase there.
I think it looks good. I agree with Charles. I like the depth that you're providing. I really like the idea of having that exemptions and assistance department where they actually, they all handle all the exemptions rather than piecemealing it out to different departments. Because if you've got a little bit here and a little bit here and a little bit there, you never know where this department might be. And you might be done with all of this and I don't even know. You still got a whole bunch over here, too. I do like the idea of the mail clerk. I hadn't even realized that we didn't have a mail clerk, like an actual mail clerk. I didn't realize that we didn't have someone dedicated to that, so that's good. I think it's good.
Are we concerned about amounts? And these are, you know, you're comparing with other surveys other people are doing, but as far as what real gain or loss our employees are seeing with the inflation that that's there.
So, yeah, so I have a survey that is, you know, position specific, organization wide. And I feel confident that the compensation aligned with each position here currently is very competitive. I feel like it's a very fair and competitive salary. I feel like we're at the top end of the scale. I will say that. So does a 3% cost of living raise?
Going backwards.
Yeah, I mean, you know, considering the amount of inflation, but I also do have to take into consideration what we are paying comparatively in the market, and comparatively in the market we are
we're well
compensated.
That's all I needed to hear.
And our benefits package.
It's being considered and thoughtfully so.
Yes.
That's, you know, you can 3% yourself into everybody quit and wanted to drive trucks for the oil companies.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and I didn't really highlight this, but one thing as I was working through the salaries, you know, specifically the biggest part of this was in residential. And Chris helped me a lot with this, but as we were kind of realigning and structuring that department and looking at the possibilities of creating these this ladder, you know, the appraiser one, appraiser two, and appraiser three, and the salaries that would correspond with each of those positions. You know, in the past, those positions, we had one budgeted salary amount for an appraiser. And doing this, and we had a lot of really new appraisers that were nowhere near that budgeted salary. So we were able to reduce the budgeted salary amounts for some of those positions, still stay, you know, very competitive for that level of an appraiser, but reduce that. I mean, that reduction alone, in doing that was about $190,000 less in the salaries.
Right.
So it did give us the opportunity to, you know, to increase some things and add, you know, these positions without
you're adding them. Positions that give greater service, better service. Something, a mistake we made years ago was grinding more and more production out of the same people and grinding them down and really and truly falling behind.
Yeah.
And your solution here is pretty elegant in avoiding that.
Are there any legislative impact that could, are there any legislative bills that you would consider are probably going to be passed into law that might impact the budgetary line item as far as are we going to need more people to maybe perform certain services that we don't have now as a result of that?
The only thing that's out there right now that I could see that could potentially impact or maybe put a more demand on us for personnel is around the TLO position. There is a piece of legislation out there that could possibly require that TLO to really need an assistant. Thankfully, we're asking to add a position to the appeals mm-hmm. department where the TLO works right now.
Okay.
So I feel like even if that does happen and it does strap the TLO more, I feel like we'll be okay in that
okay.
department.
Okay. I just want to make sure we were thinking
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
Well, go look, see what Betancourt's sponsoring. There may be some gotchas that,
yeah.
you know, agents get make more money and it mm-hmm. comes out of our hide. That
mm-hmm.
wouldn't be the first time that's mm-hmm. happened.
But I do like where there's some play for a person to grow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that too.
I like that very, very much. And when I look at the three of you and the rest of the leadership team, the real secret here is a year from now, have we been able to carry this,
mm-hmm.
train this, and show better results?
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is the hard line.
Yeah.
Have you got any more thought about how much reserve to use for our increase?
No.
Input from the entities, or
the majority of the input that I got from the entities was to hold on to it.
Yeah,
I use it.
That's smart.
Was to hold on to that instead
yeah.
of using it?
Yes.
We don't need to run the bank account dry.
Yeah.
We don't. They're all used to carrying fund balances.
Yeah, and I was going to address that later on, but yeah, I mean, it, you know, that got brought up at both of the entity meetings,
yeah.
and I've only had one entity that has said, yeah, we would appreciate you if you using reserves to buy this down. Everybody else that came up to me, I mean, it was pretty overwhelming. We really feel like you should just hang on to that money because they really do know that in the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to have to grow
pay me now, pay
facility.
Me
that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Bill comes, we've got more
yeah.
next year. Yeah. Good. I'm
yeah.
so glad they see that.
So. They all live with the same thing. They all
they're doing the same thing
happening.
Right now.
Yeah.
I assume it was a school district.
Well, school districts have... They got to pay teacher salaries and the electric bill
right.
from September through December when the tax money starts coming in.
Mm-hmm.
That fund balance is an integral part of, it's a big chunk, but they're going to burn through it
right.
and then build it back over the next year. It's just ridiculous. And there were some districts in the state of Texas that were so bullheaded, they wanted to have zero fund balance, give all
mm-hmm.
the tax money back. And when it came time to pay the teacher salaries in September, they went and sold tax anticipation notes.
Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And paid interest on money that it was stupid. We're not there anymore.
If you guys don't have any other questions on that, I'm gonna pass it over to Chris because we did do some work you know, in some of these other sections of the budget as well, and allow them to kind of speak into that a little bit.
So I'm just going to briefly mention a few categories, starting with education and training. As we increase the staff, there's going to be an additional cost in terms of like membership dues, setting them up in the organizations that we're all familiar with that we use to continue our growth and our training. We have roughly about a $12,000 increase there for our memberships and dues with the various organizations that we utilize for their area of expertise and we go to as a source of authority for our growth. And then also in training, schools, conferences, and travel. We have an increase there. As you know, we're adding a training and development department. So we want to make available some resources and some tools for that department. And so some of the additional cost there is going to aid and assist in that. Training and development is a huge need here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, coming in and looking at what we've done, what appraisers staff know, what they don't know, what type of program we can put them on to get them from the day they start till they actually begin doing the work. We need to make sure that that is a well-thought-out process and that it has the resources to be able to train them. And so you're going to see some basic increases there for training and development. The other item that I want to, and if you have questions about that, then I'm happy to do so. We went through and we actually went through how many people would we foresee being in certain classroom settings, conference settings, educational workshops, the different development areas, and then put the cost together to give us a realistic, no kidding number. And you know, while we try to be conservative, we also want to make sure that we have the funds to handle the growth to the district. The second thing, though, that I want to point out, and I think Jeannie will mention more, is under the services received department. It's one of the larger increases. Subscriptions and contracts, you'll see there where it's going from 824,756 to roughly 985,000. Three of those big items, which compose the bulk of that increase, have to do with the technology that our appraisal staff is utilizing. There are some available packages out there to us. One is with Cyclomedia, our street level photography, which we have, but they're driving more and they're seeing more with the continued development. And we want to make sure we don't lose that resource and we've budgeted appropriately for them.
I have a question on that one.
Yes.
In reality, if this works out right in the long run, there should be some savings from the other side as technology becomes stronger.
Yes.
Is that a correct?
Yes, that is correct. We hope to be able to be more efficient by utilizing the tools. The training goes hand in hand with that.
Sure.
We're building the staff. Yes, where we'd like to be at a much larger number of personnel right now, we're not there. So in the interim, as we're incrementally growing, we also have to bring in the tools that can allow the fewer to exercise a greater productivity from those.
And you can jump on technology as it comes along and you need it.
Yes.
We talked about it, but we never could quite. Okay.
So we feel like that's an important tool that we want to keep in the hands of the appraisal staff. The other two are in our BPP department and our residential department. One is a company that we utilize for various things. It's called Just Appraised, and we're making an increase there to be able to better utilize some of their online suites that they have for our rendition process. And specifically, it'll be a huge asset to us for all of the leased equipment and the leased items that are rendered to us. They have the ability, through the use of AI, to help us expedite that process. So we still may be able to do more even with less. And we haven't added anyone. We're not, you know, other than converting some support positions to actual appraisal positions, we're not actually expanding the number in business personal property, but this will be a tool that we want to continue to utilize. And then the last thing is data cloud solutions. We currently use them through our software vendor, through Harris Govern, our PAX CAMA system. But they offer some things outside of that. And one of those is this cloud-based suite that they have that's going to help us clean up a lot of our data. Mm-hmm. Whether it's sketches, whether it's validating the data, they will actually do that on our behalf. So in some ways, like you ask about business personal property, we're able to take some of the tools that they make available to us, have them perform those tasks, and then at the same time utilize the tools within that suite to better increase. But really, all of these things are about increasing our efficiency and our productivity, and the use of technology is growing at a, as it's changing.
Controls all our lives.
As weeks pass, it's changing, and we have to be able to harness that. So those are some of the big increases for subscriptions and contracts.
I've got a couple areas under services received as well, which is printing service and postage and freight, which kind of go hand in hand. Costs are up in general, and paper is one of those things that has really gone up in cost. It's doubled, and that makes not only our internal cost of paper go up, but also what we pay the vendors that print different things for us. That, and we're sending out more than we have in the past. We're going to send out renditions now, whereas last year we did the postcards. The more accounts we get, the more things we have to mail, things of that nature. Just the demand for notices and things that we send out is going up. The cost of postage has also gone up. And we actually may be a little over this year, so we wanted to be sure we really covered our bases for 2024 on that. And then my other section is under utilities and maintenance, which is information technology maintenance. We're going to be doing some hardware replacements, not the whole office, but we are doing that kind of in sections. And we're going to have more employees, which will need hardware. We're also going to a cloud storage. We currently have two physical server clusters. One is in our other building and one is in this building. Now, if something were to happen, if something happens with this server here, our other server will kick in, and vice versa. If something catastrophic happened to both, we would be in trouble. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at a cloud solution for that, which is a lot of that cost in that department. And then also our licensing for our various software is going to increase as well. Just due to the number of employees, we have to pay for more licenses for each employee. And then our... Okay.
On that hardware refresh, question can come up about, are we still Apple and Mac, or Apple and PC up here? Are we shifting
yes,
to one
we're
or
going,
other?
We're shifting to Mac.
Oh, okay.
As I understand, we do have still some that are not switched over.
Okay.
Also field devices, I believe mm-hmm. is what we're looking at. For some field devices for the appraisers.
And we like the Mac because it's just more secure. And
yes.
That's the biggest, the biggest positive to those Macs is the security, to them. And apparently they don't break.
Right.
Mm-hmm. IT tickets went down to, a fraction of what they used to be when everybody was on a PC here to when they transitioned over to Macs.
And then the last thing in the IT maintenance is that our current accounting software is just somewhat outdated. We would like to have a software that can do more for us instead of having different types of software that do different things. It entails more, such as payroll, things of that nature. We're looking into some different softwares. The one we currently have too is Windows-based, and as we're going over to the different, we're moving away from Microsoft products, we want to also have something that moves with us with technology. So that was all my sections.
So you can go from there down, everything else is really just pretty nominal. There's a little bit of an increase in furniture because we're gonna be adding some folks and we need a few desks and some furniture to put those people at a workstation. But, contingencies, it's just a percentage of our budget. So as the budget increases, we'll increase that a little bit. But, I feel really good about this budget. There have been a lot of eyes on it. We've spent a lot of time going through this. Kim and Marilyn have spent a lot of time on the accounts, ensuring that what we've been spending, if we're looking like we're going to come in over, making sure that we're accounting for that in this upcoming year, through the last over a month now, this same number has been presented, to entities a couple of different times now, and I haven't received any you know, raised eyebrows or, I mean, obviously they don't like to see the increase be so much, but at the same time, I mean, I see them nodding their heads and, you know, agreeing, they understand. And I've been getting a lot of supportive comments. So unless you guys have heard anything through this that gives you any heartburn, you know, Kim is going to work on some of the finishing details, you know, behind these accounts over the next few weeks, and we'll have this, you know, as a full budget to present as a in the budget hearing in June, as it is.
Just as a reminder, what was the balance number that we're carrying over?
Do you have that with you, Kim? I didn't bring a copy of that with me.
It's the one number, though. From 22, but rolled over was in the neighborhood of 600 something.
That's what I kind of thought, too. Okay.
Like
I just wondered. And so then this year we'll be able to have some rollover again.
We will, because any year, and you have positions that are budgeted for the entire year, you have furniture that's budgeted for the entire year, and if those things don't come into play, then obviously it still sits there and it's not expended. The same for 24.
Yeah.
We may not end 24 with 115 people, therefore those desks may not all get purchased, those salaries may not all get paid. But it models it in expectation that they would have.
And I'm in agreement with the others that I think I heard carrying it forward right now, but I think we just need to keep reminding ourselves that amount is there and not ever be foolish with it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think we'll be quite possibly coming forward with the audit in June too, right? It should be completed.
Yes,
because
the field work last week.
Yes, they were here last week, so you guys will have a financial audit to look at in June as well.
All right, anything else on item 10? All right. Adjourn to executive session. To discuss, I believe the only thing we have for executive session is discuss personnel matters. We are back from executive session at 5:00. And no motions to come out of executive session. Next meeting date. And anything anybody wants on a future agenda.
So I'm looking at June 8th, if that works for everybody.
I've got that down.
Works for me.
I'm not
available. No. Is
that
okay?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we need to work it where you are.
Yeah,
there's too many things.
I didn't know.
Oh, I would not be here on June 8th.
Oh, you know what? I will not be here on June 8th either, actually.
No? Okay.
Yeah, I've got a TAC conference.
Do we need a June meeting? You guys are going
to
be in the throes.
We've
got
to get the budget.
Yeah, I need the public hearing on the budget. So
we maybe do it on the 15th instead, because the following week I'll be out of town too.
Yeah.
On a timeline, is there an issue there?
15th.
There's not an issue. I mean,
just about every other day in June I'm not.
Yeah, that's kind of how I am too.
15th at work.
Well, what was the deal last year with our school entities? They don't meet in
July.
Mm-hmm. So if we slid it to July, we didn't meet in June.
If we didn't meet in June and we just pushed the public hearing until July.
In July, you know, that way they actually do physically meet in August.
I mean, there's not a problem with that. We just have to have the budget passed by September 15th.
So June 15th or
as
July?
As far as we know, there's no issues hanging out.
I mean, do you know how that presents a problem for the entities in any way?
We always did ours in June.
Yeah.
It's just better because you don't know what the response may be, And if you have to come back and rework something?
Yeah, then
you don't have a whole lot of time.
You're giving yourself a smaller window.
Can we go
June 1st?
Can we go
June
backwards
15th,
to June 1st?
Someone
I was thinking June 1st is the heads up though. I'm good.
June 15th?
June 1st or June 15th? I could do either one.
June 1st is iffy. I have a mediation that day. It's supposed to be a half-day mediation starting at 9 in the morning. It should be done in time to be here by 3 o'clock. But if I'm not, it means we're settling and I can't just walk out.
Yeah. What about June 15th?
I'm good the 15th, too.
15th hours.
I can do that. Can you?
Yes, I can.
June 15th?
Okay. 15th.
3 o'clock?
3 o'clock, yep.
Do we want to look at a next meeting date after that? Will we need to meet in July if we pass the budget in June?
I can't think of a reason. Is there, do you have any?
This isn't holding anybody to anything. Yeah. I just like to put it on my calendar. So
I would really
I
like
don't
to
schedule.
I would really
I mean,
like
out,
to see a
outside
calendar.
Outside of just, you know, giving you guys a, you know, an update leading up to certification in
which
July.
Which you can do by email.
Right. But I can definitely push updates out to y'all on how that's going. So I don't have anything that's pressing that I feel like we would need a meeting for in July.
But do you think you could make a calendar of meetings just for us to know on our calendars and then cancel it if you want to?
I can certainly calendar the rest of the year for you guys if you want me to do that.
It's just hard to be somewhere because I want to hold Cat time always.
Honest,
let's tentatively
I know you didn't want to do that. I remember one other time discussion, but it would just help a lot on these calendars.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with calendar and the rest of the year.
Tentatively put down August 10th.
I've got that.
Yeah.
Okay.
August what?
10th.
August 10th.
And I've got September 14th and October 12th. So basically, the second Thursday of each month, I've got down.
Yeah, September 14th will either be without me or no meeting at all because I'm on vacation that week.
Oh, there you go. Good deal.
Well, will we need a September meeting? Is there anything that has to be done in September?
Insurance
probably. It's usually right around there. We'll take a look, and I'll look at especially summer, fall, and where I know that we're gonna have to have some meetings, and I'll go ahead and shoot the dates out to you guys in an email, and we'll iron the rest of them out for the rest of the year. If that's that will be okay with y'all, then. That's what we'll do.
All right. Anything further?
I've got to get you to sign this. I just don't want you to get away.
Got it.
Missy, what time did that?
Good.
Private session start.
Great.
4:40.
Awesome.
Which one of them was
that? All right. We have a motion to adjourn.
Can we adjourn?
Second. Any opposed? We done.
All right. Good deal. I'm going to go to Mary's visitation.